Every Thursday, Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star joins us, the beat writer for Indiana basketball and football, at IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse. Good afternoon. Happy Thursday, 1 week from Thanksgiving. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How about you?
Nothing like the confluence of 1,000 sports to get us all fired up for a very, very busy weekend. High school semi-state football, women's hoops, men's hoop, NCAA men's soccer, a old brass spittoon, and we start high school basketball on our airwaves next Tuesday. So other than that, well, I didn't even throw in the Pacers. Dustin Dupirak will be here tomorrow in the Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour to talk blue and gold hoops. Other than that, we got nothing happening. How about you?
Yeah, same here. I'm just kind of taking it easy this time of year.
Yep, put your feet up. Exactly. Relax, get to it. But 1 week from today, we'll get a nice little break. We will have an NFL triple header for you here on the airwaves starting at noon. Green Bay's at Detroit, followed by the Commanders and Cowboys in Dallas and the night game San Francisco and Seattle in the rainy Pacific Northwest. So before we get to the holiday fun, and you won't be here next week, so we got a lot of things to do today, let's start, shall we, with the pigskin. The pigskin, well, it is basketball night. So maybe we should do that instead. You know what? Let's do hoop. Now, well, then soccer is before hoops. Well, maybe we should do soccer. Let's start with soccer, shall we? Coming up shortly, in just a matter of minutes, the NCAA tournament arrives in Bloomington for the first time in 10 seasons. Indiana is not a national seed, and they are playing on this Thursday. So usually the Hoosiers would be sitting back and watching the internet tonight. If you are heading to Armstrong Stadium, there is free parking available on the Briscoe grass lot south of 17th Street and at the Bell Tower as well. Those are new lots since 12 and 14 will be closed for basketball tonight. Please be aware of that. You should be heading in that direction now if you want to get a pretty good parking spot. So, no national seed, no problem. The fourth double in 6 years for Todd Yeagley's Indiana Hoosiers. We heard from Coach last half hour. Getting ready for Lipscomb, your take on the men's soccer program, and well, they have a very interesting path if they are going to get back to the College Cup. They're in the ACC, let's see, that would be, what's the opposite of coastal? The inland ACC division here in the field of 48.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of the obvious right, you know, I mean, they've won, what, 9 of 10, is it? And, you know, there's been, I mean, we've everyone's kind of done to death the whole sort of, oh, you know, they were well out of the tournament and look how they kind of pulled it together. I think, you know, the thing I would say, having watched him more closely in the last few weeks, obviously covered him over the weekend, is number one, I think you, if you're Todd Yeagley, you like the forward combinations that you have and not just scoring goals or creating chances, but, you know, that there's somebody that does a little bit of everything up top there. You've got obviously a really experienced player in Gumbale who's I think very good in particular. Obviously he's got some pace to him, but very good in hold up play, very good at kind of getting his back to goal, just making the ball stick. And that lets Indiana get runners forward. It lets Indiana gain territory and just kind of move up the pitch. And then you've got players like Tommy Mihalik and Sam Sarver, who are, you know, tricky and quick, but at the same time, I think also really good pressing off the ball. I think, you know, one of the things you saw in that Big Ten tournament final against Penn State was Penn State couldn't really build play at any, you know, point other than maybe that last kind of 10 minutes when they just sort of threw the kitchen sink looking for a goal. Indiana was so disruptive at the top of its formation with its forward press that Penn State just couldn't build anything. You know, couldn't pass the ball around. Couldn't get guys into positions that, you know, you work on in training and practice to, you know, just kind of basically create essentially the opportunity, let's say, to play the pass before the pass that leads to the shot on goal. Indiana just kind of disrupted everything and not in some sort of rear guard, you know, deep line defensive way. This isn't a team that maybe just decided to play really sort of, you know, dull negative soccer to just try and find a way to get some results on the board. It's a team that still takes some real chances and isn't afraid to press high. And it is, I think, when you combine it with just kind of the sort of what the goal return has been the last few weeks. I think it does feel like Indiana is the old cliche, playing its best at the right time of year.
And that's by design. They try to peak at the right time of the year. They do not hand out trophies in August. They do not hand them out in September. That's the old cliche, but it is absolutely true. So they have found their footing. They have won the Big Ten regular season championship. They have won the Big Ten tournament championship. And I think the other part that maybe gets lost in this is I agree with the center forward play. And I thought Indiana, and I talked with Todd Yeagley about this yesterday, had a really good Big Ten tournament from the sense that they had to do everything except chase down a lead. And you can't really replicate that in practice. How do we handle 2-0? How do we handle 3-1? How do we handle 3-3? How do we handle 1-0? I mean, you can talk about that all you want, but to go through those three things in three games, Todd thought that brings them an advantage going forward instead of winning every game in the same way.
I think that's probably fair. And I think you can even probably extend that a little bit out to the way they ended the season. I mean, you know, they weren't scoring fours and fives every week, although there were a couple crooked numbers, you know, kind of later in Big Ten play. But again, I think it's just, it doesn't feel like it's a team that can only win one way. And you know, frankly, I mean, I think Indiana's probably had some, just to be honest, some better teams in the last, you know, 5-6 years that maybe didn't feel quite so, when I say versatile, I don't mean guys necessarily can play a bunch of different positions, but it's more kind of the idea of being able to get a result in a number of different ways, you know, and I mean, you just look at those last two games in the Big Ten tournament. The Michigan game was a goals fest. There was a sending off. You know, there were all these different kinds of things. And then that Penn State game was, you know, just about as I don't say uneventful, but it's a 1-0 on a deflected goal, and it is the complete opposite in many ways of that Michigan game, and yet Indiana, you know, is comfortable enough to get the result in either case. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in before tonight's football. No, not that football. NCAA men's soccer. The tournament begins. Indiana making their 48th appearance in 51 years as a varsity sport. 37 consecutive beaten finalists in 2022. Syracuse knocked them out in the round of penalty kicks 2 years before that. Beaten finalists by Marshall, little overtime goal activity there. So this team, the upperclassmen, have seen they've been so close twice, and now their pathway will be interesting. If they beat the Bison, the three-time A-Sun tournament champions, who they played in a scrimmage back in the spring of 2022, interestingly enough, Indiana will head to Wake Forest to take on the Demon Deacons. That would be on Sunday when the Hoosiers win tonight. And then if it all goes according to Hoyle, it's Charlottesville for the seventh-seeded Virginia Cavaliers. No history there between those programs either. And then if everything continues in their path of Hoyle, it would either be Duke or Notre Dame. Indiana beginning the season in 103 degrees in South Bend in late August. They've played on that field once or twice up there in South Bend before the College Cup in Louisville. So it's not easy. It shouldn't be easy, but Indiana's familiar with most of the styles of play in their bracket. So not a quote-unquote great job, but hardly the worst draw either.
No, and I mean, listen, we say this all the time, but I think this is particularly true for low-scoring sports like baseball, like soccer. You know, you can have all the whatever you want. At the end of the day, there really is an extent to which if you're playing well going in, and you can accept that, you know, it's fine margins and that there's an element of randomness to it, you know, I'm not saying you don't worry about the path, so to speak, but it's more just, I think, if especially given the season Indiana had, you know, and given kind of where Indiana was missing some of the opportunities for you know, a more quality kind of non-conference result. And then kind of had, you know, starting slow in the Big Ten, what was it, 2 points in the first three games, and then, you know, kind of tearing it off. I think for Indiana, again, you just want to be concerned with being at your best at the right time of year. And it seems like Indiana is, you know, just based on their results. And again, based on the form of certain players, they seem relatively healthy. You know, it seems like you've got at very least a pretty settled sort of 11, which, you know, I'm not saying Indiana isn't without its flaws or its weaknesses, but I at least think there's value in, you know, walking out knowing, you know, basically game to game, it's going to be the goalie plus, you know, 10 from 11, maybe 10 from 12, if you want to, you know, go a little nuts. But, you know, they're just, I mean, I pull this stat all the time, and I use it to illustrate in particular the randomness of lower scoring sports in postseasons. Indiana's taken what, four teams, I believe, to the NCAA tournament undefeated. And this is a program that's won more national titles than anybody since, other than St. Louis, and St. Louis hasn't won one since the 60s and yada yada yada. None of the four teams that Indiana's taken to the tournament undefeated have won it. And
true story.
The point I make there is just, you know, if there's a program that would have at least one undefeated season that ends in a national championship by now, you'd think it'd be Indiana. And yet, you know, Indiana's won eight titles and none of those teams were as, maybe they were better, maybe, you know, we can have an argument about who was good and, you know, whatever, but none of those teams were certainly as flawless across the course of the regular season and the conference tournament as the four teams that went in undefeated and not one of them won a national title. So my point is, you know, if you're Indiana, I think what you really worry about is, you know, how you can get a goal. You know, who will get you a goal. You feel like you've got a lot of different ways of winning a game, which means you're flexible to your opposition. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got a roster full of players that don't, you know, aren't going to look at Wake Forest or Virginia or, you know, Duke or Notre Dame, whoever they face, if they keep advancing, and say, oh boy, how can we win this one on the road? They're not going to be intimidated by that. I think, you know, that's probably all you really want to worry about.
Indiana men's soccer tonight, getting things started. I would not want to play them right now. And Lipscomb comes in scoring almost three goals a game. Lipscomb comes in giving up almost two goals a game. They've got some fast attacking players up front, but Indiana's organization should handle that. And the Hoosiers provide a different opponent than the A-Sun. And Indiana, as you mentioned, opening the season at Notre Dame, coming back for the Classic to play a team like Washington. Kentucky was on the schedule this year as well, plus the Big Ten. You can see why they didn't get a national seed. Indiana, the only team from the Big Ten to make the NCAA tournament this season. And Hoosiers with two road wins. Usually a road win at Maryland means good things. It does for Indiana. It means you are a regular season co-champion. Beating the Terrapins and beating Penn State, that's how the Hoosiers got to host the Big Ten championship and knock off the Nittany Lions. In last Sunday's final, a 0-0. Sam Sarver cutting in through two defenders on his right foot. Yep, did take a little bit of a deflection, but found the bottom corner of Chris Shakes' net. Sarver, the most outstanding player. We'll see who the most outstanding team is tonight. 6 o'clock ESPN Plus. For those of you who have that service, or if you want to join in, if you can't make it to Bloomington, that is the only place you will find tonight's match. So you'll have to get out the checkbook again if you already haven't got the checkbook out. Zach Osterman from the Indy Star, we will do more with him. We'll talk a little hoops preview for tonight as well. When we come back, we'll take a quick timeout. The Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour here on a Thursday night. Diane Daly's news headlines are next. All right, welcome back. Don't forget, tonight we have Thanksgiving football for you. Well, we do next Thursday. Tonight we just have regular old Thursday night football. The Bengals, the Ravens, first place, Baltimore, and Cincinnati, last place, but everybody's got a winning record in the AFC North. Let me think. What am I doing here? Westwood One's broadcast begins at 7:30 tonight. We'll kick it at 8:15, and we'll be back tomorrow. Dustin Dupirak will join us. Big show Friday, the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Part two is Zach Osterman here on a very busy Thursday. He is heading to the Simon Scott Assembly Hall tonight. Indiana in basketball action, game three of the regular season, their third consecutive home game before they head to the world's most famous arena Sunday and Monday. What is the name of this classic, the Empire Classic?
The Empire Classic. They played in it before. It was called the 2K Sports Classic at the time.
Gotcha. So we're just putting new sponsors on this. This is a mattress company that's doing this one. Sarva or something like that. Not Sam Sarver. Not Serta either. It's a whole thing. But we know this. That will be Indiana's first two games outside of the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Actually, their next three all outside. They will head to Gainbridge Fieldhouse a week from Sunday to take on Harvard. That's a 4:30 tip time, and we'll worry about that after Thanksgiving. Osterman, what are we going to do about this defense, buddy? It seems for two games we watch the exact same things happen over and over again, just two teams with different colored jerseys. Communication breakdown, we're not sure if we're going under screens, busting through screens, hedging screens, switching screens, and both opponents, Florida Gulf Coast and the Army, have been plus 27 from the three-point line. Indiana still somehow 2-0. What's going to be different tonight, my friend?
I mean, it's a good question. Listen, I don't actually think Indiana's been awful defensively in either of these games, but I think what Indiana's done is it has allowed both of these opponents to feel it has dangled the carrot of, you know, sort of allowing both these opponents to feel like there was something there for them in the game, you know, and usually I think the way that games like this tend to play out is you'll play even for a little while. Obviously the lesser ranked opponent will, you know, kind of be running on adrenaline and everybody will be fresh and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't think this is an arrogant thing to say. This is probably one of the biggest games just from the perspective of where they get to play and all that of a lot of players' careers when they're in these sort of guarantee games.
Yeah, it's a cup final, right?
Yeah, at a place like Indiana. But then what happens is either kind of your depth kind of wears them down. You know, maybe your bench production is better. If they go to their bench can't come close to matching your bench, or maybe you go to your bench and they leave their starters out, but then their starters really start to tire. And basically what happens is you hit a couple of, you know, 10-0, 12-0, 15-1 runs, and suddenly the game is, you know, suddenly the advantage is 23 points, and everybody kind of looks up and shakes hands and says, fair enough. And you'll have some, you know, you'll have a couple stretches where maybe they put a 6-point run into you, and then you answer with an 8 or a 10 and that kind of thing. And in the end, you know, it ends 90-62, and everybody's kind of okay with it. The issue, I think, for Indiana is just that Indiana is not able to score in a way that really takes the game away from these teams. They've had some issues with turnovers, more so against Army than Florida Gulf Coast. They are not shooting threes at all, which is a real problem. 24 attempts across two games is I mean, obviously an incredibly small sample size, but is bottom of the barrel stuff in terms of attempts. And so what happens is, even if you get a situation with Army, I mean, Army only shot 34% from behind the three-point line, but they made 13 of them. And if they make 13 and you only make 4, then, well, there's a 27-point gap you got to make up somewhere else.
That's 14 twos the last time I counted, buddy.
What's up?
That's 14 twos. That's a lot of possessions.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, if you're already kind of offensively challenged, you just get to a point where – you know, even if teams aren't necessarily that efficient scoring the basketball, especially if they're going to bring the three-point shot into their offense, then, you know, you're going to chase a little bit when you can't string together good offensive possessions. And so, you know, in the way that these things are always sort of interrelated, I don't necessarily think Indiana is, you know, good defensively and bad offensively. And those two things, you know, sort of, those are two realities that completely separate, you know, they're completely separate from one another. But I do think that right now it's one of the difficulties Indiana's having, and there are a few. Listen, you know, you win these games by 6 and 8 points that you should be winning, obviously, by more. There's no one root cause, but one of the biggest issues for me is Indiana cannot sustain kind of consistently quality offensive possessions at a rate that takes some of that pressure off their defense and allows, you know, for the ability. I mean, Indiana's still putting together runs in these two games of, you know, holding opponents scoreless for three and a half, four minutes. And yet Indiana's not taking advantage of that, you know, and Indiana's not building a 10-0 run or a 12-1 run.
Yeah, they went 8 minutes against Florida Gulf Coast without scoring a basket.
Yeah. And so it just, again, these things are always interrelated, and it's never all one thing or another, but it just feels right now like Indiana is just kind of not in a place offensively that where it can make life easy for itself.
And that's interesting too, because Mike Woodson was talking about after the game against Army about what it should look like, and we're getting rebounds, we're getting out in transition, we're getting steals, we're doing all this. So the easy offense doesn't exist either. So maybe sometimes you get bogged down in the half court because you get bogged down in the half court, but it's not coming easily from anywhere. Mike Woodson has been a stickler for keeping five guys, starting five guys, unless somebody gets suspended for doing something stupid, all the time. What is going to push him to be like, well, we found these lineups later in games that seem to work better. When are we going to start using those to start the games? Or is that just not important to him or anything at this point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, the flip side, what I would say is you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater after two games, and you certainly can't do it after two wins. I mean, like, listen, I'm not blind to how much Indiana has struggled, and I'm not blind to, you know, let's just be really fair about it, the quality of these opponents compared to what Indiana's got going or coming up. Having said that, you didn't lose the games. And I think there's a little bit of a, you know, we talked throughout the offseason about how Indiana was going to be a work in progress for a while, how it was going to look kind of rough around the edges for a little bit, and how everybody needed to be prepared for that. And everybody, you know, if you told someone that, they'd say, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think that's absolutely right. And then they suddenly had to live it. They had to live the experience of being rough around the edges and you know, struggling with some of the stuff that we could have maybe foreseen and, you know, guys maybe not being individually complete, certainly the team not being fully complete kind of unto itself as a whole unit, and everybody kind of panicked a little bit. Now, time will tell whether or not that panic is valid, is legitimate, is going to bear out in terms of results. But for the moment, I think Mike Woodson would probably, and maybe I'll be proven wrong, maybe tonight he'll throw Gabe Cups in the starting lineup or something. And he's not been afraid of saying, listen, you know, I'm being honest with these guys, and I'll tell you what I'm telling them, which is you got to meet these certain standards for me to play you. And, you know, guys that aren't meeting those aren't going to play crunch time minutes, aren't going to play big minutes, aren't going to get, you know, the possessions and the moments in the game that maybe they'd normally want. But in the same breath, I think you'd say, listen, it's just two games, you know, and this stuff doesn't get fixed if we kind of abandon the plan, you know, at the first sign of trouble. And I think, you know, Woodson will have known more than anyone else, you know, what to expect from this team and probably some of the, you know, the shortcomings it had and some of the issues it was going to have at different times this season, particularly early in the season. And I suspect, and again, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I suspect he will say, no, we're okay. We've just got to keep playing through it.
Zach Osterman, Indy Star, at Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse, joining us talking hoops before the Hoosiers take on Wright State. 7 o'clock tonight on the Big Ten Network. And Mike Woodson also gave us a little clue after the game on Sunday as well, talking about, hey, I got to do a better job when we're getting in these pick and roll situations of big and small and making sure this all works. The one thing that I think that we learn at this time of the season when we get things started is usually when you play teams that aren't perhaps in your same radar, your same hemisphere, whatever it is, usually are smaller. Usually teams that you put in the non-conference don't have size, don't have height. If they do, they're usually ranked and playing some pretty good basketball. The smallness of these teams hasn't helped either. When you play 6'8", 6'9", 7'2", When you get it, when you got four guys on the wings running around and doing that, how do you fix that? You're not going to play zone. I know that.
I mean, he used the word zone with me at one point in the
preseason.
Once, though.
Once. Not
I mean, yeah, well, and it, you know, listen, Tom Izzo says they might play a little zone every year, and they never do. So it's just
exactly. But that's the tough part, because why wouldn't you want to get Khalil Ware away from the basket if you're the other team? Of course you want to put him in action 25 feet away from the basket. So it will be interesting to see how this evolves.
It will, and I mean, I think we talked about this last week. You know, switching defense can sometimes effectively turn into zone defense, where you're almost just kind of, for the most part, just anchored to a certain spot on the floor, and you're just defending what comes in front of you. And I think Indiana's been struggling a little bit with trying to switch as much as it wants to, which is, again, it's understandable. Switching is not as easy as I think people think it is. You know, it sounds easy in theory, but it's trickier in practice. I think, I do have some questions about that the sort of three forward lineup, if you want to call it that, or I guess Khalil Ware is really a true center, a modern center, but a true center. I do have some questions about the Mbako, Renew, Ware lineups, particularly defensively. Obviously there's separate questions about Mackenzie Mbako, who is not, you know, perhaps performed as people expected he would, given his pedigree as a five-star player and yada, yada, yada. He's only scored 6 points and taken 8 shots across these first two games. And I think we can have a separate conversation about should Indiana try to run some more stuff for him, get him more involved.
Amen.
In the game.
Hallelujah.
But in the, you know, in the same breath with all that, again, as these things are never just fully sort of separated from one another, I think that, you know, those big lineups, certainly against smaller teams, but, you know, listen, you know, it's not like you're playing the 1985 Pistons in the NBA or in the Big Ten either. Those bigger lineups, I think I still need to see more of them to feel confident that they'll work defensively in particular. On the other hand, that's one of those things that Woodson would probably be right to say, listen, if I don't play them, then they'll never figure it out.
Well, that's the difficulty they've ran into in these first two games. They haven't blown anybody out. He can't mess with any of these combinations during live basketball. This is all on the practice floor, and that's kind of the negative. I know they're 2-0, but you know you were hoping to beat Army by a few hundred so you could move some of these chess pieces around on the board and see how they work.
Yeah. No, I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. And I think it's you know, if you're a coach and you want sort of the glass half full approach, the flip side is obviously you've gotten some really sort of, you know, good tests and kind of a controlled environment where you probably weren't going to lose these games even as poorly as you were playing, but you got pushed and you got to, you know, test some guys like a Khalil Ware, like a Gabe Cups, et cetera. But
make some free throws late when the pressure's on.
To your point, you also need to be able to kind of use these games as a bit of a laboratory to, you know, tinker with some different lineups, find some combinations that work, figure out why it is that when certain guys are on the floor, they're better in one spot than the other. You know, it's that's part of what these games are for. And you don't have, you know, we say this every year, but you don't have a never ending, you know, string of them. You got Wright State tonight. That'll be a tough game. Harvard, I think, in Indianapolis, at least if Indiana continues playing the way it's playing right now, will be a tough game. Morehead State's probably not a pushover, to be honest. Don't really know what to expect from North Alabama or Kennesaw State.
Kennesaw State 2-1 on the season.
Well, Kennesaw State also turned over, obviously.
Turned over everybody.
Yeah. They had that impressive what's it called? What am I thinking of?
Upset in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, but then everybody left. Right. As you said, I think, you know, you just, it's at some point you do need at least one or two of these games to kind of go more in that direction so that you can tinker. And also just so that you can, you know, not play a ton of minutes. I mean, I don't think you need to worry about Malik Renu playing 32 minutes tonight as opposed to 25, you know, and I don't think anybody on this team is going to be of the Trayce Jackson-Davis level where they're playing 35, 38 minutes a night. I just don't, you know, I just don't think Indiana's going to lean on anybody quite that much this year. But in the same breath, you know, when you can take some minutes out of guys' legs, it's not the worst thing in the world. And because there's going to come a point in time when you really probably can't afford to. And I think it's just going to be tricky to Indiana's got to find its way to, you know, again, I think just some offensive consistency that allows it to cruise a little bit more through these games and tinker with some things.
Zach Ostrom from the Indy Star checking in. Talking hoops, Indiana Wright State tonight, 7 o'clock. We'll have full analysis tomorrow. Big show Friday, Glass, in the afternoon. All right, more concerning stat for you. Malik Renu, game one, 31 minutes, one rebound. Trey Galloway, game two, 31 minutes, no three-point shots attempted.
Wait. Hold on, rewind me through that. I got lost in the numbers.
More, that's fine. This is why we do this and have some fun. More concerning stat. Malik Renu, game one, 31 minutes, one rebound. Or Trey Galloway, game two, against Army, 31 minutes, no attempted threes. Which one concerns you more?
I mean, I would just generally say, particularly because Renu comes back the next game with seven rebounds, five assists, and three blocks. So I think you can look at that Florida Gulf Coast game and say, you know, okay, he had some points. He was really struggling to kind of engage with the game in some other spots. But he comes back against Army and has a really good game. You know, he's you know, maybe Indiana's MVP, if you want to use that term, within the course of that game. I just can't look at, and I wrote something pretty extensive about this that we published yesterday. Indiana just has to find its way to shoot more threes. And, you know, it's, I know every coach will tell you, you know, taking bad shots isn't a solution, but at a certain point, it does feel like Indiana just needs to sort of be willing to let fly a little bit more and hope that some of them go in and accept that, you know, you'll have some less productive possessions, but in the net, you know, in the aggregate, it'll come out in the wash. Indiana just like, I mean, teams just don't fear Indiana from behind the 3-point line, and they don't fear. I mean, I would argue, you know, there's kind of been this suggestion that Indiana's given up a lot of open threes, and I'd have to go back and chart every single one. And even then, you know, you and I could have a debate about what constituted open and what was the actual quality of the shot and yada yada yada. But I would argue, at least to the naked eye, that with a few exceptions, I'm not sure how many of these threes have been wide open and have been great shots and Indiana's really broken down defensively. But I think teams are just taking teams are firing up threes, even if maybe they're deeper than they'd normally take them, or they're a little more contested, or it's maybe not somebody who'd normally shoot a lot of threes, because they're just thinking, you know, if we make three threes, that's five twos that they've got to make to make up the difference. And so we can afford to be like, I mean, I think Army was very much this way. You know, Army only shoots 13 of 38. That's only 34%. And on the game, they shot, I think, about 40%, maybe a little under. You would have liked a better defensive performance overall, but you held them under a point per possession. You can live with, you know, a fair bit of that. And this is not an Army team, by the way. I mean, they put up 38 threes against Indiana. They only shot 23 in their other two they shot 21 in one of their other two games and 31 in the other one. So it's not like those VMI teams that would just run down and shoot threes and then run back on defense. I just think teams are basically like, hey, we'll just take bad, even if they're bad threes, we'll just take them, because if we make them, if we catch fire for 5 minutes, then we'll score, you know, 11 points. And we just think that Indiana's going to struggle to score 11 points in 5 minutes in long stretches of these games. And I think, again, I'm not advocating for just taking every three you can find, whether it's a good shot or a bad shot, but it does feel, to me anyway, like Indiana's in a spot where it's just sort of like, you know, teams are basically just banking that Indiana won't be able to keep up because Indiana can't or won't shoot threes. And I think as long as that's the case, it's going to be a concern.
Well, we'll see what happens tonight. Indiana, Wright State, 7 o'clock, the Big Ten Network. We know Indiana can throw it in the post. They've got options down there. Peyton Sparks returned against Army as well. It was good to see him out there. And we'll see what we've learned in practice. I think that's the last thing we'll close with on basketball. Just for today, we can't look at – I don't want to do UConn in the next game for next – I don't know what's going to happen at that point, so that's too hypothetical for me right now. But am I missing somebody on this roster that has just not been unleashed from three-point land yet, or is this a product of what Mike Woodson runs on offense?
I mean, it's – there are players that I would say, like Mbako is a good example, somebody who I'd like to see what happened if you tried to get him five attempts a game. Because if
his jump shot
good,
is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get him 5-6 attempts in a game, I wouldn't be surprised if he hit three or four of them, at least based on his reputation and his shooting form. But I would also say, I mean, Indiana was 298th last season nationally in made threes. They were 264th the year before that. They haven't ranked higher than 214th in any year in the last six before, not counting this one, obviously, again, very small sample size. You know, Indiana's been outscored behind the three-point line by 942 points in the last six plus seasons. And in none of those seasons has Indiana come anywhere near scoring as many points. The narrowest deficit in points Indiana scored off threes compared to its opponents was the COVID season. Indiana scored 105 fewer points. If you want to go to a full season, it was Archie Miller's first season when they were outscored by 123 points. I mean, you know, Indiana just hasn't, it has not had enough shooters. It has not run enough stuff for shooters. It has not emphasized the three-point line, whether it be in recruiting, in development, in execution, in scheme, whatever it might be, at nearly the rate that, you know, I think we can all recognize modern basketball generally sort of requires of teams for a long time now. And that, you know, that has included Mike Woodson. And at times Woodson has seemed interested in changing that. You know, I think I think about the quotes he gave early in kind of his first season where he said, "I just want guys to keep shooting it," basically. But you know, nothing's changed. You know, if anything, Indiana has taken, you know, fewer threes, to be completely honest with you. Indiana was 352nd last year in, what's the statistic? Let me find it really fast. I just don't want to give you the wrong. I think they were 345th in points, in percentage of points scored from threes nationally. And they were 354th in 3-point attempts as a percentage of overall field goal attempts. So basically, what percentage of your total shots are threes. Now, last season's a bit of an outlier. You have a hyper-efficient and incredibly productive post player. Of course, you're not going to be jacking up threes when you could be giving the ball to Trace Jackson Davis. But I've got 6 years of data here that says that even if last year was a bit of kind of a bottoming out or whatever you want to say, it is not an outlier at all. Indiana just has not, under two different coaches and running a bunch of different systems and, you know, with a lot of different sort of, you know, star players, if you want to say, Indiana has not emphasized the three-point line against anybody. So they've just, I mean, you know, I don't think you can sit here and say, well, it's just because they haven't gotten so-and-so enough shots or because they don't run this one action that they should run on offense. It feels systemic at this point, and I don't know how Indiana breaks itself of that.
All right, Zach Osterman, Indy Star, joined us on a Thursday. We'll play this on a Friday. Football, the old brass spittoon, the first of two trophy games to wrap up the 2023 season, and sadly, yes, it will wrap up the 2023 season. Indiana's 48-45 overtime loss in the other Memorial Stadium last Saturday to Illinois means mathematically it was a must-win game. It was a math-win game, and Indiana now can only have 5 wins on the season. You need 6 to be bowl eligible, so we flush those expectations down the drain, but after a 2-10 year, a 4-8 year, 5-7 seems to be going in the right direction. How important, my friend, are these final 2 games to A, the psyche of the Indiana football fan, and the direction of the program under the leadership of Coach Tom Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that a lot of, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not. I suspect maybe it's not a great thing. It does feel like this season is going to be contextualized in some very key ways by these last 2 games. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think we had actually seen before the Illinois game some progress defensively. I don't think you can deny that we have seen progress offensively. I mean, even before the Illinois game, you felt like you were seeing an offense that was at least making fewer mistakes, that was understanding kind of where to cut its cloth a little bit better. Now we're talking about an Indiana offense that's up to 8th in the Big Ten in yards per game, which I recognize is not like a resoundingly impressive number, but like, you know, consider where it was coming from. An Indiana offense that is starting to develop some individual playmakers. Brandon Sorsby, 5 touchdowns in that Illinois game. Donovan McCulley playing really well. I think E.J. Williams quietly also playing really well at receiver. You know, McCulley's probably overshadowing him just a little bit. But Williams, you know, I think these last 2 games, 8 catches for 102 yards. And it's felt like he has really kind of, because he was also injured for a while, it's worth saying. It's like he's really settled into sort of a similar role to what Indiana needs for McCulley in terms of his body type and the kinds of routes he wants to run and all this. If that progress continues at the level that it's going, I don't think it's not at all difficult to see Indiana winning these 2 games. And if you win these 2 games, again, I don't know if this is good or not for Indiana, but if you win these 2 games, then the narrative does become close the season well, won 3 of the last 4, you know, offense finally trending in the right direction, defense shoring some things up. Let's presume that they win these games and play fairly well defensively. You've got your 2 trophies for the first time since 2016, only the second time, I think, since 2001 or 2000, somewhere in there. You know, you finally win the bucket game for the first time in 3 or 4 years. Tom Allen pointed out today this would be Indiana's first successful sort of retention of the old brass platoon since 1969. And you're allowed to say, hey, that's 2 wins, 4 wins, 5 wins. There's some roster building here. There's some NIL resources going in. Indiana's had some success getting guys out of the portal that made an impact. 8 home games next year. Yes, the schedule's difficult, but there's 8 home games next year. It seems like there's some momentum here. Maybe it's kind of give this one more year to see if it continues on this track. You lose both these games, and it's really hard to paint like any real sort of positive momentum. Even if you do have some individual performances, good individual performances, even if, let's say, Indiana loses these 2 games, you know, with Brandon Sorsby continuing to play well, then you can say, well, great, in isolation, the quarterback's getting better, but, you know, the wider team performances are still really ugly. Again, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but it really does feel like a lot of Indiana's, a lot of kind of what Indiana is going to hope, you know, sort of it can underpin kind of the narrative of this season pushing into the offseason is riding on these last 2 games.
Yes, and it has to be, because when you put yourself into a must-win November 4-0, that's difficult. So you've kind of painted yourself into this corner. I don't think the schedule makers did us any favors either. Louisville, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, I mean, that's not an easy ride for anybody. They're all in the top 12 or 10 nationally. It's not an excuse, but you're 3-7 for a reason. So to expect them to win 3 of their last 4 – That's kind of where we're at. That the tearing point, correct? It's just hard to square. How can we just get this all figured out now? Well, simple answer would be Purdue's wildly inconsistent. So is Michigan State. It's not that these games are impossible to win. I think that puts even more pressure on Indiana.
No, I think it does. And, you know, I mean, it's that fine line between sort of pressure and opportunity because, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that Indiana is a better football team than Michigan State or Purdue right now. Now
that's why losing these games would be punishable or hurtful.
Yeah. And these are rivalry games. And, you know, if you're Indiana in particular, you're kind of, you know, you're picking yourself up off the mat of, you know, bowl eligibility, you know, coming so close to winning that Illinois game. And I think if Indiana had won the Illinois game, then I think that whole idea of finishing 4-0 and getting to bowl eligibility would have started to become real in a lot of
absolutely
ways.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
But you have a Purdue team that, you know, suddenly found something last weekend at Minnesota playing without any real pressure that they lost bowl eligibility a couple weekends ago. You got a Michigan State team that is probably going to be a little bit beat up from that Ohio State game. But again, another one where I recognize bowl eligibility fell off the table for them last weekend, but I don't know if Michigan State was ever really sort of trying to tell itself that story of, hey, we can make this happen. So Indiana's kind of got the mental hurdle of overcoming that disappointment. I do think Indiana's a better team and is probably in a better place from just an overall sort of direction standpoint than Michigan State, certainly, and possibly Purdue. It's kind of it's a first year coach. It's always kind of difficult to peg where that, you know, how to process that. But there's going to be some pressure, particularly I think on Saturday, senior day, you're at home. At least last time I saw you were favorite. But there's also the opportunity of, hey, even if there's no bowl, you know, you'd be remembered like any team that wins both of its rivalry games is remembered fondly. And any team that wins more games than it won the year before is allowed to at least sort of look at the final results and say, it's not good enough. It's not what we expected, but you know, we kept fighting for it and all those kind of cliches about there's still progress and yada, yada, yada. And it feels like it's the tests are more tangible, I guess, more intangible, I guess, is my point for Indiana right now.
If you're Tom Allen, do you dress this up like a bowl game behind the scenes? I know he wouldn't come out and say that in public because he'd get ripped from post to pillar or pillar to post about it. But do you dress these games up differently because they are trophy games and because you know this is the tangible end of the season?
I mean, I don't think you have to tell kids, you know, what's at stake in terms of it being the end of the season. I think you're always going to do something a little bit different around trophy games. You know, you're always going to have some alumni come in and talk, or, you know, you're going to have a little bit of a, you know, kind of a different edge. You know, any coach will tell you that, and again, some of that, I suspect some of that you don't really need to tell players either, that they're going to know some of that, you know, kind of to start with or to begin with. They're going to, particularly the bucket game, the Spittoon's a little different. I don't think it's fierce a rivalry. It's obviously not played every single year. It has been recently because they've both been in the same division. But if you look at it historically, and this is probably going to remain the case once the Big Ten moves to a divisionless scheduling model, it'll get played a lot, but it won't get played every single season. It's not probably not as intense of a rivalry as the Purdue rivalry is. I think you always treat trophy games a little differently. I think players, even if you didn't say anything to them, you know, do anything different, I think players would always see trophy games a little bit differently. You know, how much you maybe make this about, you know, oh, let's, you know, this is our bowl game now. As that part of it, I think, is probably more down to, you know, how much a coach does or doesn't sort of have a feel for his team and whether that's a message that's a message that's going to resonate or a message that is going to, you know, kind of fall on deaf ears. I think that's again, kind of down to your coach more than anything else, or your coach's feel for their locker room. But, you know, I think if nothing else, again, it will always be a little bit different in rivalry weeks.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star. All right, easier to do. Continue the offensive production, fixing 662 yards against on the defensive side of the ball.
I mean, that was the one that Tom Allen said this. I mean, he said, you know, didn't really see that coming. And Illinois obviously has a couple good receivers, but, you know, to get lit up by a backup quarterback and just, I mean, like the big chunk plays, you know, the number of ways it just seemed like Illinois, no matter what Indiana did, Illinois just kept finding space, kept finding big yardage, you know, particularly through the air. I mean, it's one thing if that's your performance against an Ohio State or a Michigan, and you can just sort of look at it and say, well, you know, that happens. That's bound to happen with, you know, with the talent gap and how good they are and their scheme and yada, yada, yada. But to have it happen against Illinois and, you know, for your coach to come out and say, I didn't really expect that because we prepared well and we've been playing well for the last couple of weeks defensively and things that, you know, things that felt like they were kind of starting to turn around. I mean, it was surprising, and I suspect if you're Indiana, dispiriting that it just kind of, even stuff as basic as, you know, post game coaches and players talking about how, you know, guys are getting the wrong signals, you know, and part of some of the breakdowns were just as fundamental as like not being able to communicate the most basic things necessary to try and be successful within the game. You know, I mean, I think there's some stuff you can work on there. It's obviously deep in the season to make any sort of fundamental changes. Of course, there's obviously some stuff that you can work on with players, you know, that you can, again, stuff like, you know, ironing out communication issues, certainly at the top of the list or near it. But there's also some of it that I think you just look at if you're Indiana and you just sort of say, hey, like, there's an element of this that is just as basic as we've got to look at each other and say, that wasn't us and that can't be us. Because, I mean, that's probably as bad as we've seen Indiana play defensively all season. And that is not an opponent that necessarily should have been able to do that to the Hoosiers.
When we return after the holiday break, will Tom Allen still be the football coach? Is that a tangible discussion based on the results in these two games, or is the buyout too big? What do we tell fans that ask that question?
That's a good. I mean, I don't have a great answer.
That's fair. And again, the results mean this much. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, well, and again, this may be one of those things where I don't know if that's a good thing for Indiana or a bad thing. I don't know if that's healthy. I don't, you know, I mean, is the difference between 3 wins and 5 wins, is that a genuine sort of indication of progress and forward momentum? I could make an argument either way, that if Indiana was to win five, you know, finish 5-7, I mean, even to the extent that if you'd offered an Indiana fan 5-7 with both trophy games at the beginning of the year, I wonder where the average fan would have fallen in terms of saying, is, you know, in terms of the answer to the question, is that good enough for you?
I would say yes, because Vegas had the number at 4. So,
and because it would feel like progress, to be fair.
And I mean, no Cam Camper and changing horses in the middle of the stream on offense and finding a way to 5 wins. It's not played in a vacuum. I think that's probably the bigger argument. So if you had your heart set on a bowl or bust before the season started and Vegas told you the number was 4, this should not be a shocking development to you. But fans, short for fanatic, we know how that works. Hey, have a great night tonight at Simon Scott Assembly Hall. We'll be following at Zach Osterman. I'll be at soccer. I'll handle the football. You handle the hoops. And we'll meet back here on the 30th. My goodness. Of November, the final day of the 11th month, 2 weeks from today, buddy.
Sounds good, brother.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Do exactly what I'm going to do. Eat too much and watch too much football. How's that sound?
That sounds fantastic. Egg bowl for everybody. Thanks, class.
Zach Osterman, the Indy Star, IndyStar.com. Support your local journalists. at Zach Osterman to follow along on the Twitter. All right, that's part one of a big show Friday. Dustin Dupirak will be with us next. He's live on the phone. We will talk about the upstart Pacers, 2-0 in the in-season tournament, 7-4 overall, and a nice little break here before they return to our airwaves on Sunday, hosting the Orlando Magic, 4:30 pregame for a 5 o'clock tip.